This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Since 2010, the University of North Carolina has faced a very public inquiry into the academic and athletic scandal at the flagship school. Allegations of fake classes and inappropriate assistance for student athletes forced the institution to conduct internal investigations. In 2014, the school released the Weinstein Report that outlined special treatment of athletes, particularly basketball and football players. A newly released correspondence shows what was going on behind the scenes in the midst of revelations about academic fraud. News and Observer investigative reporter Dan Kane takes a look back at the events and the administration's response in a series this week called Carolina's Blind Spot. Dan Kane joins me now. Welcome back, Dane.
Well, thanks for having me here, Frank.
I just made you Dane, which is a contraction for Dan Kane.
I have bylines spelled Dane Kane. It happens every... Don't worry about it.
Take us back to the beginning. Now, when did the university and the administration first become aware of these problems?
They first became aware on August 16th of 2011, and that is when I sent them a copy of a transcript from a football player who had gotten into some trouble earlier for taking kind of perks from agents. His name is Marvin Austin. He was a highly sought-after prospect who went to Carolina. And his transcript showed that before he even starts his first full semester as a freshman, you know, they're bringing him in there to practice for the summer, and they put him in a class, you know, kind of give him a head start. But they don't stick him in, like, you know, psychology 101 or English, you know, 100 or, you know, math 101. They put him in a 400 level, you know, African studies class, and he gets a B+. And then he starts his first semester as a freshman, and there he's taking all the introductory classes, including, you know, the English 100 class, which was kind of like the catch up English class. Mm-hmm. And this just didn't make any sense that he would start out that way. And so, you know, I brought it to their attention. I told them I was working on a story about it. And like literally within a day, they realized they had a serious problem. So, you know, an investigation was launched. This was an internal one. It was the first of, you know, three. They contacted the NCAA. The NCAA came in. And then I think the following May, they put out their first report basically disclosing that, you know, there were like 50 of these classes that never met, didn't seem to have any instruction, and the only requirement really was to turn in a paper. But at the same time, when they put out that report, they said, well, there were non-athletes in these classes, you know, everybody was treated the same, and so, you know, we don't think this is about athletics. And I started to challenge that, really, with a number of records requests, requesting, like, enrollments in all of these classes, which turned out to be, like, almost two-thirds, you know, athletes. Mm-hmm. We uncovered Julius Nangro's last class he taught, and we need to talk about who these two people were the architects here. And let's go ahead and say that right now.
Sure.
You know, these are classes that were tied to the department chairman, you know, Julius Nangro, of the you know, African Studies Department, mm-hmm. and his office manager, you know, Debbie Crowder, who basically was a clerical employee who had been there a long time, like 30 years. I started looking at, you know, the classes that they had identified. I discovered that one of them, you know, Julius had gotten, you know, additional pay for, you know, $12,000, you know, summer pay, because he supposedly taught it in the summer, and it was in 2011. So I asked for all the correspondence on that. It turned out it had been created literally within a couple of days and was full of football players.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's stop right there, because, again, the university has figured all this out. You do an inquiry. They do an internal investigation. They find out that there are a number of classes in the African Studies Department that are bogus classes. They are never taught. There are students enrolled. But they say, well, it's not an athletic scandal because half of those students are non-athletes. And they leave it there. And so the question was never asked, why were these classes started in the first place? What purpose mm-hmm. do they serve? How are students? All those questions, it seemed to me, were not asked by the investigators.
Yes, and that was what was fascinating to me, was that they never really had a cause for what happened. They didn't seem to be doing the digging that would help you find a cause. And we can kind of skip forward a little bit. You know, we had another investigation after I'd gotten a hold of a transcript that turned out to belong to Julius Peppers, that was just laced with these glasses.
He's a football player now playing
football
in the
player,
NFL.
Yes, yeah. And who had left the university in 2001, which indicated that two things. Number one, this thing went back a lot farther than the university had sought to verify. And B, you know, this athlete had several of these glasses. And again, you know, evidence that this was a lot more closely tied to athletics than what the university was, you know, saying. And so that leads to another investigation, you know, led by Governor Martin and a consulting firm known as Baker Tilly. Well, they don't bring in, you know, from Baker Tilly, they don't really bring people in with real investigative experience. These are more like auditors, who were actually first brought in to just look at the controls they had put in place, mm-hmm. you know. And then suddenly, because of the Peppers transcript, they get told, oh, well, help Governor Martin with his investigation, okay? So you really didn't have the expertise there. They produced a report that said, you know, this is not about athletics. It's an academic scandal, but it's not about athletics, with a lot of supposition and not a lot of real inquiry, okay?
Well, so let's talk some more about this, because now since then you've gotten access to internal communications from the Board of Trustees and administration, and start to see their concerns and how they viewed this problem. Tell us about what those communiques revealed.
Sure. The communication basically revealed, you know, a real reluctance to just go deeper on this, you know, to try to get more records, look at transcripts, and just wanting to kind of say, we've done enough here. We've gotten to the bottom of it as best we can. It's time to move forward. You know, these two people are gone. We have all these reforms. Our new controls have been, certified. You know, let's just move on. But in doing so, they weren't, by not getting the root causes, you know, it's like, you know, I think I said this in a New York Times article. It's what that whole thing you say about the history, you know. Right. I mean, if you don't learn from your mistakes or what happened, you're bound to repeat it.
Right.
And so, you know, I kept inquiring. I kept making records requests. I got a break in, March of 2013, mm-hmm. when thank God for Sunshine Week. You know, which is that week where we talk about how the importance of open government, public records, open meetings. I wrote a story about how I had all these records requests from UNC that were just sitting there. They hadn't been answered. I hadn't gotten any records from them. The chairman of the board at the time, the board of trustees, Wade Hargrove, he was a media attorney. He understood the mission of the media and the public records laws. He kind of put the, told them, look, you know, you got to respond to these things. And lo and behold, you know, about a couple months later, I get, you know, about 50 emails that really countered what the Martin Report had said. They showed that, you know, a counselor in the academic support program for student athletes had gone to Julius Dangoro and asked him to create one of these classes. You know, they showed that, you know, Debbie Crowder, an office manager who was not a faculty member, did not have she just had a bachelor's degree in English. She had no expertise in AFAM. She's being asked to approve topics for these papers, okay? And then the other third thing in there that was pretty important was, you know, there was some email correspondence where two academic counselors, you know, outside of athletics, these are the regular academic advisors, are talking about Debbie telling them, you know, this thing's gotten into the frat circuit, and I don't want to see those kids, basically. Mm. So that showed that this was not intended for everybody. Mm. So those were pretty big developments. And then the other thing that was really important that the series revealed was that the members of the Board of Governors who were kind of trying to ride herd over the investigations, they had no idea about these emails. They didn't know that there was this kind of evidence there, and they were surprised by it. And some of them said, you know, we've got to investigate this. You know, one of them said, we got to investigate this ASAP. And yet then that sort of mindset kind of comes in again, you know, about just not really pursuing.
Well, where was the resistance coming from? Because there were trustees and governors who were urging them to go forward and others who didn't, and particularly on the Board of Trustees. And we don't have about a minute left, but there was at least one trustee who was saying, you know, it was warning the trustees, and all the rest were, or many of the others were saying, let's sweep it under the rug.
Yeah, that was Burley Mitchell on the Board of Governors. You know, former chief Supreme Court Justice, long time. Prosecutor, judge, somebody who knows, basically how investigations are conducted. And they didn't want to listen to him. He felt, and there's some evidence to this, he felt that they just viewed him as an rival NC State fan, just trying to drum things up.
Well, thank you so much for your hard work. I think it does demonstrate the importance of this. And the series itself, there are not a lot of new revelations. A lot of it is just sort of putting together. But I think one of the things it does is what the university wouldn't do, which was see this thing as a piece, as a whole. And when you put it together as a whole, the picture is very clear. Something was terribly wrong. Systems weren't in place. I think it's important to put these things together in a series.
I just want to tell you, I mean, there is a lot of new stuff in there. We actually, when we wrote this, we went through it and sort of marked off the new. It's about 70% new material and 30% just kind of, the story that we've all kind of followed over the years. So.
And the new stuff is particularly these communiques, these revelations that people knew then and were making warnings, and they were being widely ignored.
Yeah, that's a big chunk of it.
Well, it's good stuff, Dan. Thank you so much for your hard work.
Thank you very much.
Dan Kane, investigative reporter with the News and Observer. We have links to that work at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we will talk with Gloria Steinem, feminist icon, 82 years old. We'll take a look back at her career and what she's looking forward to doing next. We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.